We made this.
The big 3-0. I can't believe that I've actually managed to last this far. And I'm into the second year of the podcast. I mean, yeah, 30 episodes. Man, I keep saying 30 years. and I've had to keep recording because I keep dropping the 30 years rather than 30 episodes. But it's just flown by, like 30 years, apparently. Welcome to Pick a Disc. I'm your host, Matt Latham, if you're waiting for me to introduce myself. This is the podcast where I talk to people about albums that they like or want to talk about. Only because it's the 30th and it's the, basically, every 10 episodes, I switch it up and someone comes on and talks to me about an album that I want to talk about because it's my podcast and I want to talk about stuff as well, you know what I mean? This fortnight, the album in question is Give Up by The Postal Service. And the host is Tim Henton from the Without a Mouse podcast. Now, he's appeared on the podcast before in episode 7 talking about Jimmy Eat World, and he loves the album as much as I do, and we just have a nice chat about the album, the songs. We talk about Ben Gibbard. We briefly touch about Jimmy Tamarillo. We talk about, and we also talk about like side projects as well, and just in general about if they're any good. And this is the first time that, and this would have been the first time that I tried it, so by the time of recording this, I might have tried getting people on Twitter to suggest stuff. So if that's happened in an earlier episode, then yeah, it we did this first. We did this quite in advance, so in the peek behind the Iron Curtain. If you like the episode, well, if you like the podcast, you know what to do by now. Is you just go onto whatever type of site or service or podcast app you do, and if they do reviews, remember, lie and say that we're good. Again, opinion fraud is the best thing to do to help promote the podcast. If you've just listened to us anyway, you can follow us on like Instagram, on Twitter, and Facebook under Pick a Disc. We have a Facebook group, which is always welcoming for new people to join in and try and talk to people about music. And yeah, just support the podcast whatever you want to do. And I think that's it. So without further ado, it's time to call a surgeon who can crack my ribs and repair this broken heart that you're deserting, which, on reflection, it might not have been the best lyric to try and segue into the conversation that you're about to listen to between me and Tim.
Right. Hello again, Matthew.
Hello, Tim.
It doesn't feel too long since we last spoke.
No.
What was it? Muppet Treasure Island. It's actually my current most recent episode that's on Without a Mouse at the moment.
Yes, at the time of recording, because we're... We're currently in March, Tim. Wink.
Oh, right. Yes. Okay. Yes. Kayfabe. Keep up the kayfabe.
Yes.
How are you anyway? In our preamble before we started recording, you asked me and I've just realised that I'm very impolite. I haven't asked you yet. How are you doing?
I'm fine. Thank you, Tim. Thank you for asking.
Good. Good. So, it's a bit of a weirder episode this time because... It feels very strange to be kind of hosting on someone else's podcast. It's not something I've ever thought I'd be doing.
Yeah, just don't break it.
Yeah, I'm going to change the whole format now. It's when we say disc, it's going to be about like a video game disc, I think. So I hope you've prepared a list of your favourite video games. No, only kidding. So, yeah. So I suppose the question you have to start with is, which disc have you picked?
I have picked Give Up by The Postal Service.
Brilliant. And you were kind of prompted, I believe, by me on the Twitter.
Yeah, well...
Was this already in your pipeline before? Because the reason you've asked me to host is because I mentioned them quite recently, didn't I?
Yeah, because I think... Well, the thing is that because I've got a list of albums that I would like to pick and talk about because of the 10... On the 10th, every 10 episodes, Matt pick one. I've got like a list of albums that I love to talk about. And The Postal Service was one of them, actually.
Oh, right. Okay.
And you mentioned that you know, like one of your favourite albums. I was like, oh, okay. And I briefly mentioned about you perhaps hosting one of these in the future. And to be honest, this has jumped up a bit earlier than perhaps I'd expected it to. About a week or so ago, I did Albums of the Decade. I mentioned another album, which was actually about turning 30. The artist wrote it in 2015 and released. She wrote it in 2014, released in 2015, the year I was 30, and it was about like the anxieties about turning 30. And I thought, oh, I wonder if anyone's talking about this. And I did put an album request on like Twitter, and no one answered it at all. So I thought, okay, that might have been a good 30th episode, but no one answered it. I might try and see if anyone will like to talk about that album at some point. Yeah. So, and then I thought, then I looked back and then basically at one point turned around and I saw the vinyl of the 10th anniversary of Give Up behind me, and then thought, oh, okay, I'll talk about that. I know someone who might want to talk about that as well. And that's when I sent you the message about talking to you about doing this.
Right. I didn't realize you had the 10th anniversary edition. I'm a bit jealous now that I know that fact. I was just pricing it up online about 10 minutes ago. And I've got the original pressing from 2004, which does still, for the vinyl copy, it does still have some B-sides and remixes and stuff. But I think your version comes with a whole extra LP, is that right?
I think there's two.
Ooh.
Yeah, there's two. I think there's one with like B-sides and stuff, and then there's others with like kind of remixes, and there's the Iron and Wine cover of Such Great Heights,
yeah,
and
yeah,
there's a Shins cover of We'll Become Silhouettes as
so
well.
The original pressing actually for the vinyl rather than the CD, which is what I've got the vinyl, it does come with a second disc with all of the remixes on, but there's like new live performances and stuff on your third disc, I think. So, but as I say,
yes,
rather jealous. Didn't realize it had ever been released. I don't know how I managed to miss all of the stuff that was going on for the 10th anniversary, because I did get into this album quite late, but I was a fan by that point, so I've got no excuse.
Yeah, I think this was also, I think the Christmas, I think it was 2015, that my parents got me a vinyl record player. Years and years of managing to convince myself not to buy one, because I know that for a fact I probably would have ended up buying a load of vinyl. And that's eventually what happened in 2016. But I think during Christmas, I was in London over the Christmas holiday. My sister lives around London. And I made my way all the way down to Kingston to, I think, Banquet Records, which is a great, great record shop. And like, I remember going in the one year and pretty much like, it's my music taste. It is my kind of weird indie-ish music taste, all wrapped up together. Like, they've got a counter where they hand over the money. It's just like Polaroids of everyone who's played in store. And it's like, oh, and cool. it's like my MP3 collection, just staring back at me over like 10 years. I'm like, wow, okay. Wow, they played. But that year I went down and they had the 10th anniversary special edition, and it was like about 30 quid. And I was like, well, I've just had some Christmas money. I've just had a vinyl player. I might as well get the album. And then I finally owned, that's the first physical copy of it I owned.
So yeah, I got mine. It's very specific of a time for me, because it was when I first moved into my own flat in York in 2010, which was when I first got it. Honestly, can't remember. I'd never listened to any of their music previously, but I'm a massive... hadn't heard any of the songs off this album before committing to buy it. So I honestly can't remember what made me do it, other than being a Death Cab fan in general. I think I might have actually found, like yourself, seen it in a physical record shop and just thought I'd take a punt on it. But for me, it was the very first album that I bought, having moved into my own house, having set up my record player properly for the first time since leaving home. And it's quite an album of, it's got a bit of melancholy, sort of almost not loneliness, but being on your own kind of feel to some of the songs, which kind of, or at least I think there is. So it really reminds me of a very specific time.
I think, if I remember rightly, because I was trying to think about my origin of actually listening to them. And I'm pretty sure it was around about 2004, 2005. I was definitely at uni, and I'm pretty sure it was one of the songs that at the time I had like a Nokia phone. It was like an LCD Nokia phone where it was like black and white, but it had like a memory card, like a memory card slot or a memory space that you could, it's not a memory card slot, at least you could plug it into the USB, and it had 32 megabytes of memory on it, and you could play MP3s.
But like two or three fitting on your whole memory.
I managed to fit about 20 of them, but I had to reduce them from like the CD quality of like 128 kps. that the default was, and I managed to get some software online that reduced them down to 32 kps, which made them sound like there was on an AM radio. Such great heights, such great heights, an MP3 that I got through alongside the cover of Against All Odds, and for years those were the two songs from them I listened to. Was pretty much like one of 20 songs all I had on this phone, and it pretty much like for a whole year going to and from uni on the bus, I was listening to these like 20 songs, and like the shuffle was crap on the phone. So it'd be like Spotify sometimes does, where you listen to the first three and then you jump to the first one, then jump to a fourth, then jump to the first one again. And yeah, I think my phone just really liked Such Great Heights and played it through. And
I imagine reducing the quality, because it's got a bit of a lo-fi element to it, I suppose it would still sound pretty good. I mean, there's probably a market for people buying these phones specifically to get that kind of distorted audio these days.
Yeah, but the original MP3 sounded really great and clear. And really brought the ambience.
It's funny, because I think I'm terrible for actually cleaning my records and stuff, and this one obviously I've had about 10 years by now, so it almost sounds more kind of sketchy and crackly and stuff because my physical record is getting dirty. But I really like that element to listening to this now, so I like all the extra pops and clicks that it gives. It kind of fits the sound almost, but then it means I've kind of over the last 10 years forgotten what it's supposed to sound like. I've got my own version of what the music should be. So why did you pick this album in the first place?
Well, in previous podcasts, particularly the Streets one, my last pick, I think I've talked about that I've got like top tier and lower tier favourite albums, and like my top 10 is like 15. This just doesn't crack the top tier bit, but it's quite high on the lower tier. And I also think it's a very interesting album that kind of nestles between like the renaissance of music discovery I had in like 2008. It's just like around just before like I discovered Kate Nash and before I discovered MySpace, and like really found the indie pop genre. And it kind of like soundtracks and kind of reminds me of like pretty much being like disillusioned and lost in like my early 20s, particularly like 19, 20 and stuff. Very directionless. And there's like an unease in life. And there's like the same kind of works as like a soundtrack to that, or like a score almost, particularly on some of the songs. Once I got the full album through, I did eventually buy it when I got iTunes a few years later. Yeah, it just kind of worked. It just kind of like worked its magic in kind of like soundtracking and kind of capturing the mood that I was in. At that point. And then right after that, another favorite album of mine would play, which sounds completely different and very. Which kind of like boosted my mood. Even though this isn't like a melancholic album at all, it has that kind of relaxing, kind of like somber, reflective element to it that kind of like calms you down. And it just reminds me of that kind of like period of life. And I can look back on that now and think, okay, yeah, I was like that at one time. It's nice to be able to reflect on how much I've changed since then.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think we've got similar kind of relationships with this music then, basically, is what we're saying. Even if you came to it a bit earlier than I did. So obviously, a question you normally ask is if this was the first music by the band that you discovered, but there ain't very much else to hear from the Postal Service. But obviously, Death Cab for Cutie, and obviously Jim Tamborello, he had his electronic music that he released before then, which he called himself, I'm going to assume it's pronounced Duntel. D-N-T-E-L. Haven't a clue. I've never heard it said out loud. So assuming that it's... Were you into either of those projects before hearing the Postal Service?
No, actually. The Postal Service... I mean, I still haven't... I've not listened to any of Duntel at all, or any of Jimmy Tamborello's stuff at all, which on reflection feels kind of bad, but even though I've given quite a lot of space for Death Cab for Cutie afterwards. And I find that quite weird, because I'm pretty sure I actually watched the OC before I discovered the postal service, and somehow managed to avoid Seth Cohen.
Oh yeah, because he name drops Death Cab for Cutie, doesn't he? And,
I think I think it's part of like a big part of the character actually. Is he's fanboys and movies.
Yeah.
I can't remember exactly. I think it might have been just like me exploring afterwards. Like, oh, what else has this guy done? This was my entry to Ben Gibbard,
right?
As an artist anyway. And if I'm going to be honest, I still think this might be the best thing he's done. I quite like Death Cab. I mean, I've not listened to all the albums. Transatlantism and Plans, I think, are brilliant albums. Some of the other stuff I've listened to, I've either not listened to much, or I think his latest one before is Kintasari. It's the Japanese.
Yeah.
One Japanese title, because I saw him live during that tour, and I can't remember what it was. It was okay, but not as good as the other albums I listened to. But I still... my heart still like kind of goes back to Give Up, if I'm honest.
Yeah, at the same time as you were discovering the postal service the first time round, I was kind of, that's when I was into Death Cab and then kind of got into postal service later. And I hadn't realised until looking into it today, but my favourite Death Cab album, which is Transatlanticism, actually came out the same year as Give Up, which I hadn't realised. So very busy year for our Ben. But I think I always thought I was a bigger fan of Death Cab than I actually kind of was, and I absolutely adore the album Transatlanticism. It's one of my favourite albums of all time, but I don't think I'm particularly a Death Cab fan. I think I'm just a fan of that particular album. So in some ways, I think for me, Postal Service and Death Cab, although I discovered Death Cab first, I think they're pretty even for me in terms of which I prefer.
Okay.
Which is interesting. But yeah, every time I've tried to get into more Death Cab after Transatlanticism, I've never liked it.
Oh, okay. I mean, like,
I don't know why.
Plans, I think, came out afterwards, and I do really like Plans. Plans is a lot more darker.
Yeah, that was the one that was their most successful, I think, wasn't it? It was.
Yeah, it's the one with I Will Follow You in the Dark and what Sarah said and some really... And that's I love that song. I do love that song. Yeah, but then I think afterwards, I kind of don't think I like touched upon them since. But then I think definitely their 2015 album, because I did see Death Cab live in 2015.
So have you got any highlights from this record? Which songs really jump out at you?
I think the first one I think is the hit, which is Such Great Heights, because it's such a great song.
Absolutely.
You should have to laugh, Tim. It's such a great song.
But, oh, ha 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 ha. Brilliant. Lovely.
Okay. So I'll edit in a studio audience laughing at that. Such Great Heights, I think, is just a brilliant song. I've seen people say it's overplayed, but those people are wrong. I never get bored of it. That opening synth, it's haunting in a way that... It's haunting in a way and kind of in vain that just is just great. It might only be my second favourite kind of synth riff ever. The first one belongs to Pure Shores by All Saints, and I'll die on that opinion.
Okay, all right, yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't thought of that song for a while.
Oh, man, I love that song. That haunted synth's brilliant. But on the same level, is Such Great Heights with that kind of like synth bit and the guitar solo, which is just basically the same note playing with a bit of a variation later on.
If you're not concentrating, you don't even notice there's guitars in half the songs that there is. When I've had the liner notes in my hand whilst I've been listening to it tonight, or as you would call them, linear notes, as you were tweeted earlier. But it's really funny because obviously it has the list of who's playing what on each song, and sometimes it'll say guitars, and I'm like, where?
The name Postal Service comes from the fact that Tamarello and Gibbard were sending tapes through the Postal Service.
Yeah.
And I think what happened was that a lot of the majority of the electronic stuff was done by Tamarello. He sent it across, and I think that Gibbard would overdub the guitars and the vocals onto it. And I think they would then mix and master it with, I think, Jenny Lewis from Rilo Kiley, doing backing vocals and any other instrumentalists. I can't remember off the top of my head who else was involved. I know that Jenny Lewis definitely was involved. And then there is another
female vocalist as well, but I can't remember.
Another highlight of mine. But there's like that kind of like weird gentle guitar elements to that song as well. Where else to talk about? One of my favourites of the album as well is Nothing Better with Jen Wood. That's the name of the
artist.
That's
it, yeah.
Nothing Better, which kind of skewers the emo, kind of the macho, kind of like it's like, kind of like the anti-punk, anti-emo song that you probably got at the time, where like you've got like men singing about, "Oh, please like me, take me back" and stuff, and then kind of.
But yeah, you get the female side of it as well, don't you?
That's kind of rare. I mean, considering the Death Cab is probably known for quite heartbreaking songs that all genders can kind of relate to.
Yeah.
Even though Gibbons writing them for, like, from a male perspective at times, it's quite nice to. I say nice. It's interesting and kind of refreshing to be able to listen to something like what might be a normal Death Cab song, but then you get the female response to it.
Yeah.
And there are just some kind of really heartbreaking lines on this, in that song, where like you've got Gibbard's usual kind of overemphasis of like sad metaphor. Like, I mean, the first line's about, "Can someone I crack my ribs and repair this broken heart," and then later on you've got Jen Wood singing like, "Don't feed me lies about some idealistic future."
Yeah,
which is like one of my favorite lines on the album, and it's also perhaps one of the songs where the vocal performances probably overshadow the music in the background as well. It's also one of the few albums that I know of that where I've actually paid attention to the music as well, because there's so much more interesting stuff. What else is there? We Will Become Silhouettes is amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
This Place Is a Prison is quite dark and great. Sleeping In, Recycled Air, I think is great, mainly because it has that kind of floaty aspect that it kind of does invoke you, like flying in the air, and then it turns into a song about sex.
It's really funny reading the liner notes, because in songs like that, I like that Gibbard actually annotates the ba ba bars and the oohs.
Yes.
Which I always think's really cute when you see them in the liner notes and not just skipped over.
Yeah, I mean, for example, I think because it kind of keeps that kind of calm, sedate bit in the drum when the drum machine kicks in, it kind of like doesn't overshadow or change the tempo of the song as it does in other songs, and like it just keeps that kind of like dreamlike quality to it. And it's unintentionally hilarious, but I think it's a great line anyway, where basically in the second verse he goes, "Knuckles clenched to white as the landing gear retract for flight," which I will leave listeners to work out what that means. But then the idea of recycled air, again, I think the idea is the image of just basically like lovers kissing each other and just like, and the air being passed through the mouth and stuff. And it's just like interesting imagery done in just like a kind of like very interesting way.
Speaking of sort of lyrics and stuff, my favourite little section, which gives me a bit of a giggle when I hear it, is the very beginning of the song Clark Gable. I mean, if you read the first few lines, it's, "I was waiting for a cross-town train in the London Underground when it struck me that I've been waiting since birth to find a love that would look and sound like a movie." But the way it's actually delivered in the song, he stops after "when it struck me" for quite a long pause. So when you take the first two lines out of context, and especially because it's the very beginning of the song, you don't know what it's going to be about, it sounds like he's just been hit by a fucking train.
Yeah.
And I think, like, because obviously, as I say, I was looking through the lyrics, which is something that I don't normally do when I was listening to it today, and that just, I laughed out loud at that bit, because it's just quite subtle but quite clever.
But that is very much Ben Gibbard.
It's very over dramatic, but it's also cheeky, and it's got a humour to it that's, you know, because a lot of the emo acts from this era, you know, they haven't stood to the test of time, but there's a sincerity to him that a lot of bands didn't have.
If you look at some of the Death Cab songs, I mean, like What Sarah Said from Plans, I'll Follow You Into the Dark, he's very earnest, he's very serious, and he's got that very kind of like nice, approachable voice where you know he's very self-aware, but he's able to basically break your heart.
Yeah.
Break your heart with just like a turn of phrase. And he kind of does that here, but I think this is very different and the same at the same time. Yeah. Where that lyric wouldn't sound out of place on a Death Cab record, but it probably wouldn't with what the usual music is like. And again, it comes across as like humorous, lighthearted, but also serious at the same time. And like, because then with the rest of that song, it then merges to him basically kind of talking about romance and being kind and gets into quite a complex idea of like believing in that romance in the movies should be acting like as they should in real life, but it isn't and stuff. And like, there's like an element to like kind of fan, like kind of like romantic fantasy that runs in the protagonist's head, which when you think about it, that comes pretty much a few songs from Nothing Better, where pretty much he's able to, where the female vocalist kind of criticizes himself for doing some kind of idealistic fantasy, and then Clark Gable is him kind of doing that, even though he kind of has that kind of self-realization at the end as well.
Yeah, and then even like going back to Such Great Heights, I mean, Gibbard himself has said about that song that it's like the only song about love he's ever written that's from a positive perspective. So you've got that whole range on this album that maybe you don't have in a Death Cab output as much.
I think a lot of that is to do with like the instrumentation as well. And I feel kind of bad for not, because again, this is my kind of like my slant towards the lyrics rather than the actual music. So when I try and talk about music, the music side of stuff kind of falters in places. But one of the reasons I did this podcast was to try and learn more about it. And I have actually listened to the music a lot more deliberately in the lead up to this album, into this episode recording. And yeah, I think that kind of the music kind of suits his voice quite a lot as well. So like the kind of like reduced guitars and the more electronic stuff just kind of sits in and kind of emphasizes the more romantic and upbeat stuff.
Yeah.
As well, and but then also highlights quite a bit of the more darker aspects, but in a slightly more upbeat way. So for example, another highlight, because there are loads of them and pretty much most of the songs, We Will Become Silhouettes is like a very upbeat, kind of upbeat, happy song about dying in a nuclear holocaust.
Yeah. There's a song for everyone on this album.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so, like, if you... The video... Have you ever watched the video for...
I've only watched the video for Such Great Heights today. I haven't had a chance to watch any of the others, so...
Because it's the only song I think of theirs that have them as the actual band in the video. So you've got kind of like... And it's kind of like a 90s, 50s, like, family sitting in a living room, Ben Gibbard singing... Tremolo's on this kind of like 50s style electronic, I can't remember what they're called. He's got kind of like music stuff. Jenny Lewis is kind of like sitting with two kids next to her and they're all singing along, moving their hands, kind of happy families. And then they go outside for a cycle and then you start to see pretty much like ruins, and it kind of looks like there's like the survivors of a nuclear holocaust, and it looks like Fallout.
Well, this is what I'll be doing as soon as we finish this recording, then I'll be watching that.
Yeah, and but then everyone's all kind of upbeat with the song and stuff. And,
yeah.
But then, like, you listen to the lyrics, and if you actually listen to the lyrics are actually quite dark.
Yeah.
They're quite dark when you think about it. Like, I've got a cupboard with cans of food, filtered water and pictures of you, and I'm not coming out when this is all over. And later on he goes, I'm screaming at the top of my lungs, pretending the echoes belong to someone that I used to know. It's like...
But the delivery is so, like, happy and... it's very odd, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, and the chorus is pretty much saying the only thing that will be left of us are the burn marks of our bodies that after the nuclear bomb goes off. And it's... But then it's like that... Bah, 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 and it's just... It's an album that encourages re-listening, because I think you... The first or second time that you listen to it with, like, fresh ears, you'll listen to it and you're thinking, okay, you've got the kind of, like, ambient side... in places, particularly in the second half of the album, which kind of high, like soundtracks kind of like introspection, but with like a kind of like upbeat bit. So you're like, oh, this is kind of nice. And then when the second or third time, when you actually start to pick up on the lyrics and start to digest what exactly they're singing, it's like, oh, okay, this has layers.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's one of the albums that I haven't really given much thought to the lyrics until the recording of this episode, because a lot of albums that I only have on vinyl are the ones that, you know, I'll have on in the background while I'm reading a magazine, or I'll have it on whilst I'm cooking in the kitchen and things like that. So a lot of these albums from this time that I bought, I mean, not this time that it came out, but the albums that I bought around this time, I've never really thought, I've enjoyed them, but I've not thought about what the lyrics are describing, because I've always been doing something else. So it's been a really good thing for me to just sit and have the liner notes, have a read whilst listening to them today, because yeah, the lyrics on this are cracking. Speaking of music videos as well, in my research today, I did find out that I don't know if you have you seen the video for Such Great Heights, because I found out that Apple got into a lot of legal trouble with the postal service, because Apple did an advert for their iMac in 2006 and basically ripped off their entire video shot for shot. And I found a really good video on YouTube which actually shows the two side by side. So I'd recommend checking that out afterwards, because it's insane how whoever Apple hired to make this advert literally just copy and pasted it.
Yeah, I think they also got issues with the US Postal Service.
Yes, I'd read that as well.
Yeah, because I think they had a cease and desist order presented to them for using the name. And if I understand correctly, they came to a settlement, which I think they ended up having to play a conference for the Postal Service. And I think the album was actually sold on the US Postal Service's website for a time.
I can't think of a more mismatched thing to happen than like the Postal Service, the music that they have playing at this big corporate conference. Like, it doesn't gel.
Yeah, there's a quote that Tamarillo actually had, which I've already here. He said, it was really weird. When we found out we had to do it, it was really depressing, and it kind of freaked me out. I already don't like flying, and flying to play a show for people who aren't probably going to care. We only played two songs. It seemed like a crazy trip, but then when we did it, it ended up being kind of fun.
Cool. So we've talked highlights. Are there any songs in particular from this album that you would skip? I mean, from my perspective, it's quite a lean album as it is, because it's under 45 minutes long. There's 10 songs altogether. So do you think there are any bits that are needed to be skipped, or?
Not really. I mean, if I could probably listen to it all the way through, but I think if I was driving to work or something, the album usually finishes just before Natural Anthem starts. And Natural Anthem is probably my least favourite out the rest of them. Because I think, again, it is quite an instrumental song for the majority of it.
Yeah, it's kind of the heaviest part of the album as well, isn't it? It gets quite distorted and quite fast-paced.
Yeah.
And the lyrics don't kick in until a good few minutes in. It's definitely this album's Goodbye Sky Harbor, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's a better length.
Yeah.
Better length.
It's not 15 minutes long like the Jimmy Eat World song.
Yeah. Yeah. But I like it. I mean, it's got interesting sound, particularly after if you listen to it and you're stuck in traffic on the bus coming back from uni where you was like bored to death. But yeah, initially I thought that the album was probably a lot more front half loaded, because like This Place Is a Prison is probably my second least favorite on the album as well. Again, because I think it's probably just kind of like one of the darker, lower songs on it. And it's got, but I think Brand New Colony kind of breaks up those two as well anyway. So yeah. You kind of get like, and I quite like Brand New Colony. But then the rest of the songs, I mean, I really quite like. And it's kind of hard for me to find some of that. Yeah. As I said, I always thought it was more front half loaded, but that's probably because, like, for the majority, it's like a good 6-7 songs.
Yeah.
Like, I can listen through straight away and not even think of skipping. Places of Prison, if I'm dedicated to listen to it, I'll listen to it. If not, then if I won't lose sleep if I miss it and I listen, so.
For me, it's a very lean album, and I quite like everything that's there, to be honest. The listening to the B-sides on the second LP, I do feel like you can tell that they are B-sides, so I'm glad they, you know, it makes a better 10 track album than a 12 track album, I think.
Yeah, some of the B-sides and stuff I think are a bit, yeah, they managed to kind of censor or edit themselves to the right songs, I think. Yeah, so I really do like the cover of Against All Odds, though, mainly because it was like the only other song I heard for them for about a year and a bit before I found any others.
I'm not sure if I've heard the Against All Odds cover, to be honest, because it's not on my version. So
I think it's on like Spotify and other streaming services, I'm sure.
I love a podcast when it gives me homework.
Yes. Yeah, and what better homework than listening to a podcast on an album that you've never listened to? If you've not, I'm talking to you, listener, if you've never listened to the Postal Service. If you've never listened to the Postal Service, what are you doing? Pause this podcast, listen to it, and then come back to this next bit.
We can both wholeheartedly recommend it.
Yes.
Speaking of, obviously the reception for the album, I was not aware of it at the time, so I hadn't realised until today how well it actually did. So it was the record label Sub Pop. It was their second biggest album of all time after Nirvana's Bleach. It went platinum, which is crazy for considering, you know, it's technically a new album, an album by a new group. Obviously, there's the connections of Death Cab and things like that, but it did really well.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is probably because of Such Great Heights being used a lot everywhere, I think.
It was from that era in the mid-noughties where if you could get your single on every American TV show ever, you were sorted.
I remember watching an episode, I think, of Veronica Mars, when Veronica Mars was on UK Living, and it was pretty much shown once a day, because it was the only UK air date it ever had. And I think about 6 or 7 episodes in, there's a scene where Kirsten Bell's Veronica is with, I think it's Troy, who's played by Aaron Ashmore, because I think there's like a weird romantic arc very, very at the start, and they're driving, I think, to Tijuana, and like they're listening in like Veronica's convertible, and then suddenly Such Great Heights comes on, and it's a very weird bit where like Kirsten Bell kind of delivers, "Shh, I like this song," and you kind of just hear it playing as they're driving, it's like a product placement for the song, more or less.
Yeah, I think it was in Grey's Anatomy as well. I'm sure it'll have been in some other teen shows because, I mean, in a way, like the most well known band for getting promoted on teen TV, other than songs like this, is Death Cab for Cutie. Like, they were everywhere at this time.
It was, yeah, they were like the soundtrack for the disillusioned teenage youth.
Yeah.
They were like the counter. Yeah, it kind of was the early noughties.
There was an artist that I really liked at the time called Jax Mannequin, which I don't know if you were aware of, which was the side project for Andrew McMahon from Something Corporate. And I remember as a teenager being so happy for him and feeling like he'd really made it, because his song and music video were linked to the TV show One Tree Hill. And that's very of a time, isn't it? And then as well, speaking of Jack's Mannequin, obviously you did a thing on Twitter this week, because obviously Postal Service is a side project as well. So the question you've been asking people is, you know, if people have a band that is a side project that they prefer to the big cheese, as it is. So do you have any others other than the Postal Service?
For me, myself, I can't think of anything off the top of my head, and there's probably one screaming at me that I am unaware of, that I'll probably, once we finish recording, I'll go, "Ah, knackers." But the Postal Service is probably the biggest one that I think I know of.
Yeah.
I can't think off the top of my head. As I said, I thought, for the first time ever in the history of the podcast, I kind of roughly knew the topic or that we'll probably end up moving towards, and I thought I'd asked the question to the public. So I put something on Twitter and Instagram, and we got quite a sizable response off Twitter. Cool. Nothing from Instagram.
Oh, well, it's not picture based, is it?
No, I'm a bit disappointed. I'm a bit disappointed in you, Instagram. I would have put you high up on my favourite social networks as well. Anyway, so we've got, I think, Brandon Matuala from, I think, quite a few, I think, like Trek FM and Star Trek podcasts, mentioned about how to destroy angels and the film score work of Reznor Ross to Nine Inch Nails proper. Because I think Atticus Ross and Trent Reznor have done quite well there, scoring of films, like, for example, the Social Network and the TV show Watchmen.
Yeah.
And other films that I did research and forgot about. For example, some guy called Timbles RH on Twitter.
Oh, I wonder who that is.
Yeah, it looks weird. Connor Oberst and the Mystic Valley Band has stuck with me longer than Bright Eyes.
Yeah, this guy sounds like he knows what he's talking about, because I agree. Yeah, Bright Eyes, like Death Cab, are a band that for a long time I thought I was really into. And again, it was probably just the one album that I was that into, which was, I really liked I'm Wide Awake, It's Morning. But apart from that, I really don't get on with Bright Eyes. But and again, almost parallel, I was into Death Cab and Bright Eyes at the same time. Around the same time as I bought the Postal Service album, I remember buying from a record shop in York, I bought Connor Oberst and the Mystic Valley Band's album. Really loved it. So...
yeah, I just remembered Better Oblivion Community Centre is a side project of Connor Oberst.
He's got like 4,000 different projects,
yes,
hasn't
true,
he?
True. The only Bright Eyes album I actually listened to properly is the one that was on this podcast, even though I keep telling myself I need to listen to more. But Better Oblivion Community Centre. It was actually my third favourite album of this year, and you can actually hear a small podcast on that if you go back a couple of episodes back from the start, the end of last year. Mogwai Fears Satan on Twitter is Colin from We Dig Music, who's been on this podcast a few times now. I love Tool, but over the years I've been so much more likely to put on the first two A Perfect Circle records than any of Tool's. And I love the Postal Service more than Death Can for Cutie. To which I responded with, is Death Can the street percussion side project? So Death Can.
Nice.
Right Film Podcast said James Dean Bradfield is just as good on his own than with the Manic Street Preachers. He is that band. I don't know much about the Manic Street Preachers, if I'm completely honest, to really comment on that. But responded to Brandon's tweet about Reznor and Ross, about the Watchmen soundtrack. I recently watched that, binged that in like 2 days over Christmas, and that is a brilliant TV show. The Tune Stars podcast says, I love Miles Kennedy with Slash, but haven't found too many Alter Bridge tunes that I truly dig. Again, my knowledge of Alter Bridge is a bit lacking. I've discovered that people are suggesting stuff that I've never listened to, which is the Play Disc podcast, which is a podcast that at the time of recording I've just recently found, and podcasts with the word disc in them need to stick together. So yeah, there's two presenters. One's called Harrison and the other is called, it begins with J, I want to say John. Oh, I'm so sorry if you listen to this and screaming at me. I like the raconteurs better than I liked either the White Stripes or Jack White's solo work. Again, cool. I only know the singles of the White Stripes. He also added, Motley Crue was never my thing, but I was really into Nikki Sixx's side project 6 AM. Again, I don't know which anything. And the one that I'm not going to go on to too much detail, but he mentioned with, and last but definitely not least, Boxcar Racer.
All right, I haven't thought of them for a long
while. Yeah, their one album, which Playdisc will be covering in a later episode this year, is better than most, possibly all Blink-182's albums. I had to respond and say, I really wanted to get into Boxcar Racer, but the only songs I quite like were the single I Feel So and Elevator with Mark Hoppus, which is basically a song that sounded like it could come from the self-titled, and I think the self-titled is one of the best pop punk albums of all time.
Well, I was going to say, my only recognition of Boxcar Racer is the song I Feel So, and it's bordering on Blink then as well. So I'd be interested to actually listen to the album and see the differences. Going back to Andrew McMahon and Jack's Mannequin, like there are my example of a really annoying bureaucracy to side projects, which was that he started off in a band called Something Corporate. Then he decided he didn't want to be quite as punk rock as that, so he set up his own side project called Jack's Mannequin, which then had three more albums as that. Then he decided he wanted to be able to... He felt too restricted then and could only play... Like when he did live shows, felt he could only play Jack's Mannequin stuff. So then he went and started releasing music under his own name, Andrew McMahon, so that then he could play Andrew McMahon songs and Jack's Mannequin songs and Something Corporate songs at his shows. But he then decided after a single EP of four songs that he didn't like that name anymore. So now he's called Andrew McMahon in the Wilderness, and has released three more albums as this band, but again, plays all the music from all of his other bands when you go and see him. And it drives me mad that he's got these four songs in the middle that are technically just called Andrew under his own name, Andrew McMahon. But it just drives me mad. So I think all side projects should be banned, and you should just whatever name you start with is what you end with.
Yeah, I think the other co-host kind of chirped in on the Play This Podcast Twitter as well. Said, which Harrison, I think his name is. I just woke up, so let me chime in. I like Anthony Green's work better than any of his work with Circa Survive. I also saw Albert Hammond Jr. do a solo show once. He was great. It surprised me to learn he was a member of the Strokes. He also then mentions, does Jack's Mannequin count? They started out as a side project, but then eventually came Andrew McMahon's main project. And I think that I think he just managed to help kind of flesh out that bit with for me. So
there you go. How serendipitous.
Yes. Yeah. So thank you for those that have sent stuff in. And it was quite nice. If I might try that again at some point. It might be very interesting if this has happened in a later episode I record and it turns out to air before this, but sorry.
It's really funny because whenever we try and ask the community a question on Twitter and stuff, nobody ever responds. But then when I post the most ridiculous thing, like a silly picture, people always will reply to it. It's a bit frustrating. Anyway, so I had a quick look online to see when or if the Postal Service had ever actually come to the UK to perform. And it seems like they did a handful of shows for their 10-year anniversary in 2013. You've obviously mentioned earlier that you've seen Death Cab. Did you ever actually get to see the Postal Service? It's something that I wish I'd bloody done. I should have gone.
Yes, I'm actually currently staring because we're at there's like three vinyl shaped 12x12 frames that I've got in front of me just above the desk in the room I'm in, and they're all full of gig tickets when gig tickets are actually gig tickets. And the bottom of the middle one is the Postal Service from Saturday the 18th of May 2013.
Oh, yeah, bastard.
From Manchester. And I remember going to that, driving all the way up. I was actually there with your co-host, Mr. Wilson.
Really?
Yeah, he was also there.
Wow. Well, I did not know that.
Yeah, so like,
I wouldn't have picked him as a Postal Service fan.
Well, I'm surprised. Don't you know your co-host?
Well, I mean, the Postal Service, none of their albums are euphemisms for sexual organs, so.
And I'm pretty sure they have never been used for a wrestling theme either.
No.
No, so, yeah, no, definitely. Because I remember he was at, because I met up with him beforehand and we went. Yeah, we was there. We both watched them, yeah. But no, it was great. Because I loved the album for absolutely years. And like, because I'm pretty much convinced that I'd never watch them. And when they was doing the tour, the 10-year tour, I snapped up the ticket immediately. And to be fair, it wasn't, I mean, like, considering like, I think they sold out and, because I only did about three or four dates in the UK, I think.
Yeah.
There's only, it was a 20 gig ticket, which is like quite cheap for.
Yeah, I'm surprised.
But cheap, but yeah, but I found the set list as well, and they pretty much played everything.
Well, yeah, when you've got that few songs, you kind of have to, don't you? Yeah.
Yeah. So the played a couple of covers as well, a few B sides. They also played "This Is the Dream" of Evan and Chan, which is from Duntil, which I think was the first collaboration, which I never actually knew existed until like an hour ago.
Same. Yeah, I listened to it about an hour ago as well. It feels very much. The prototype for the Postal Service. It's not quite the same, but you can see where it's starting to form, can't you?
Yeah, I think you listen to it and you think, oh, okay, I can see how they both look at each other and go, yeah, we can do other stuff we could.
Yeah.
So, but it was just great because they didn't end on Such Great Heights. They ended the main set on Natural Anthem, and Such Great Heights was before then because that would probably be a weird song to try and figure out where to play. Do you put it in the middle,
yeah,
at the end? Because it doesn't feel like a set closer, even though it's probably the more known song.
Yeah.
So they ended the encore with Brand New Colony.
All right, okay.
It's an interesting choice because it's a very upbeat and kind of energetic song, particularly at the end. So that'll probably get people going as well.
But well, I was reading an article earlier that was calling it a dance track, which I don't quite agree with, but I can see comparative to the rest of the album, it probably is a bit more.
There was a lot of light. There was a lot of like light set up behind them as well. So there's a lot of blue and red lights that kind of shine behind him and turned him into pretty much silhouettes at times. And he kind of, so they managed to cut the lights off in front, and that a few times the light was from behind them and you just saw the outlines of them, which worked quite well. I think at the start, because I think they play We Will Become Silhouettes, I think second, because they opened with District as well. And yeah, it was just really, really good. It was great. I think a lot of it was like kind of like adrenaline to think, oh my God, I'm hearing these songs live for the only time I'll ever will. And yeah, it was great. And I think a few years later, in 2015, I went to see Death Cab for Cutie. Talking about the fact that I always thought that Liner Notes were called Linear Notes. For years, I thought it was Death Cab for a Cutie.
Well, it's pretty much the same, isn't it?
Yeah, and that kind of confused me when like the definite article wasn't there. But yeah, I saw them and it was nice. It was great to hear some of the songs that I really knew. There was quite a lot of songs that I didn't know from earlier stuff that a lot of the people around were singing. They played the song. He played quite a few bits from Transatlanticism and Plans. But I don't know. The majority of it, I was kind of like, yeah, it's all right. Didn't blow me away as much as the Postal Service did though. But it was nice for after when they came, when Ben Gibbard came back for the encore, he pretty much played an acoustic version of I Will Follow You to the Dark, which was great.
Nice.
And then,
yeah.
At that point, I kind of left to miss the queue of traffic because I'm pretty sure he was going to finish on a song that I had no idea what from their first album. So
yeah.
So that's my live.
Cool. Yes, as I've just mentioned, I have not seen them and I'm a bit gutted. So
That's going to be an interesting conversation between you and your co-host next time.
Yes.
I didn't know you liked the Postal Service.
So I know this is probably a daft question to ask such a music aficionado like yourself, but have you seen any other kind of like an anniversary show for a band or for a particular album?
In 2018, on my 33rd birthday, Los Campesinos, my favourite band, did the 10th anniversary of their first ever album, which is one of my favourite albums of all time. It was in London, Kentish Town.
Nice.
So I went down, they then played, they did a set, not the album all the way through, they played a, like, they supported themselves. So the first set was a 45-minute set of just songs from the first two albums with two notable exceptions. And then they kind of like had a break and then they came back and did like an hour and a half set of all the songs from like their third to sixth album as like a celebration of that. At the time of recording, I would have gone to see the same band do Romance Is Boring, their third album, which is celebrating their 10th anniversary, which is my favourite album of all time, which I alluded to earlier. I'm going to assume that I am now a changed man. I have transcended from an experience of listening to 15 songs on the most perfect crafted collection of artistry ever made.
So I'm very fortunate to be, you know, talking to you in the last few weeks of your first phase of existence before you evolve.
Yeah, this is like kind of weird time capsule. So yes, it's a weird time capsule. Yeah, so that's on the 14th and 15th, because they was doing two nights, the Friday and the Saturday, but I wouldn't be able to make the Friday, so I'm only going on the Saturday. And which is okay, because that means I can still afford a hotel. But and I would love to have gone for the Friday as well, but because I got a feeling that they was going to do another set with and mix it up on both nights. So I am looking forward to doing that. At the time of listening, I probably would have driven people mad talking about it on Twitter. So
I'm sure I've seen it a couple of times that you've mentioned it. Yeah,
yeah. I think last time I saw when Los Campesinos was in Birmingham, I pretty much ended up on doing like just posting me re-listening to the albums in order with like long Instagram comments offering commentary on the on the albums. But so those are the only two that I can think of. I'm pretty sure there's others and it's bugging me. I can't remember off the top of my head of any other kind of anniversary shows.
I think for me the prominent one would be when I went to see American Football. They did a 15-year anniversary tour for their first album. And as I kind of mentioned on the Christmas bonus episode that we recorded, I never ever thought I would get the chance to see them, because they released the first album in 1999, played something like two or three shows, and then broke up. So when I first heard of them back in like 2013, I think it was, I honestly thought I'd never get the chance to see them. And within months of me getting into them, because it was one of those albums that went straight to in my top five. Like, it was, I can't believe I'd gone this long without finding it. And then within the space of a year, I was at Electric Ballroom in Camden watching this band that I thought I would never ever see. And so that was fantastic. That was a really good night, that one.
Yeah, I think particularly as well, particularly on anniversary shows, the crowd are all there because you all know why you're there.
Yeah.
Everyone will know the songs. Everyone will know the album stuff.
It was bizarre because obviously at the same time as being an anniversary celebration, every single person in that room was seeing them for the first time ever, which was a really weird juxtaposition. So the energy in that room was just mental, as you can imagine.
Yeah, I mean, the energy when I went to see Lost Camp was just ridiculous. Everyone was there. Everyone knew why they were there. Everyone was so nice. You could talk to a random stranger and like you'd have something to talk about.
Yeah.
So I quite like the idea of anniversary shows, if I'm honest. I mean, there are probably...
Yeah, I've seen a few others as well, but that's the most notable for me.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that as soon as we finish recording, we're going to go, oh, God.
Another question to ask the Twitterverse.
Yes.
Right, so we've been going for a decent chunk of time. Unless there's anything else you wanted to talk about, we could get to the playlist the playlist song.
Yeah, I can't think of anything else. I mean, there are, as we mentioned, the bit where I say any other albums in the discography, but as you mentioned at the start, there ain't.
Yeah.
we talked about the side stuff, so I guess it's time for me to grab control back.
Oh, I'll let you go on then.
Yeah. Grab control back of the podcast. Here we go.
Yeah. Careful, it's heavy.
Yeah, to be fair, this is like the first proper episode I recorded for at least a month and a half. So, about a month, yeah. So, I just need to get back into the swing of things.
That's it. Christmas break's over now, Matt.
Yeah, I need to get back into the swing of stuff. Find a 29th episode to record. But
I mean, I don't mean Christmas episode. I mean Easter, because obviously, do you say this is going out in March?
Yes, yeah. Yeah.
Keep up the illusion.
Yes. Behind the curtain. I might just keep all this in. Right, okay. So, the Playlist Hall of Fame. For those listening for the first time, as always, there's a Spotify playlist because it's the only music service I use. I don't use Apple Music, unfortunately. So there's a playlist on Spotify that I create, and I always ask the guest when they pick the disc to pick a song to leave a lasting legacy on the playlist. However, this is my pick, but in the spirit of the playlist, I'll ask the guest to choose a song to add to them because I don't want to have control over what goes on the playlist. So, Tim, which song are you going to immortalise forever?
So, I had the similar struggle that I had when I did my Jimmy Eat World episode, in that these are both albums where I really like pretty much every song almost equally. So I was really struggling to pick one. As I said earlier, I'm not like you in the sense of I don't focus in on the lyrics as such. So there isn't lyrically anything that was standing out for me. So I've had to go... I've picked my track. It's not one of the singles, but I've picked a track which whenever I hear if anyone ever brings up the Postal Service, I decided to go for the little earworm that goes straight into my head as soon as anyone brings them up, which is the very big intro of this song, which sounds like a video game, which anytime I hear the Postal Service is the first thing that goes into my head, which is... So it had to be Brand New Colony for me.
Yep. Okay.
For that reason alone, like that little sequence is what I think of whenever I think of the Postal Service. So if I had to pick one song out of any, it had to be that one.
There was never going to be really a wrong answer to that.
No, not really.
Yeah, unless you went, the Postal Service cover of Goodbye Sky Harbor. yeah, no, it's great. I mean, I'm trying to figure out what I pick, but I think One day I might just release a playlist of all my picks of what I would pick, but that day is yet to come yet. I might wait until there's a decent size of songs to pick from. So yeah, so Brand New Colony. That's a good pick. It's the dance track that closed the live show that I said I went to. So yeah, that'll be immortalised forever in the Playlist Hall of Fame. So Tim, thank you ever so much. For not breaking the podcast.
You're very welcome. What a very weird experience to host someone else's podcast. It's quite enjoyable.
Yeah.
I hope I did all right.
Yeah. Begin your reign of trying to take over every other podcast on the We Made This Network.
Yeah, what shall I do next? Muscles from Brussels, I think.
Yes. Just start putting your armies in and annexing Brussels. So if people want to find you on your own podcast that you actually do host... even though you might have now just like lost interest in your own podcast in hosting it.
Yeah, this one's more fun. I might just, shall we swap?
No, I'm not watching bad Disney films. So
it's Yeah, it's a bigger commitment, my podcast.
Yes.
Yeah, so if anybody's interested, me and Chris Wilson, who has also guested on Pick a Disc a couple of times, we host a podcast called Without a Mouse, which is we sit down and watch obscure and forgotten live-action Disney movies, trying to hunt for a hidden gem. So far, it turns out there aren't very many, which is driving us a bit insane, to be honest. And if you want to find that, it's on all of your podcast apps. Just search for Without a Mouse, part of the We Made This Network, like Pick a Disc. You can also follow us on Twitter at Podwam. We're on Instagram at Without a Mouse. And then my personal Twitter is at TimblesRH.
Tim, thank you ever so much for hosting the third Matt pick and like joining the legacy of people to host that aren't me.
It's been a pleasure.
And not breaking it, yes. And yeah, and thanks for giving the opportunity just to revisit just a brilliant album.
I'll have to finally decide what my second pick will be to come on and do another episode as well.
Well, another Jimmy Eat World album.
As I say, I've got it down to Smurfs Go Pop or The Woolpackers or possibly just my CD single of the Mr. Blobby song. So, you know,
ooh,
very 90s.
I had that on cassette.
Oh, old school.
Yes. Bum, 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 bum. Okay. And with that, and on that bombshell, goodbye, Tim.
Tatty bye.
You've been listening to Pick a Disc, and I've been your host, Matthew Layton. Our theme music is Pump by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com. Pick a Disc is hosted by the We Made This Podcast Network, and you can find them on www.spreaker.com/user/WeMadeThis. You can find the Pick a Disc show site on www.spreaker.com/show/PickADisc. You can find us on all the usual social media type places like Facebook, Instagram, Twitter under Pick a Disc. You can also email us on pickadisc@gmail.com. Until next time, happy listening to all those discs that you are picking. Goodbye.
Previously on the We Made This Network. We buy records.
Paul, listeners of our last episode will recall that you've been on your holidays. And it was such an odyssey that it couldn't possibly fit into one episode, could it?
No. Last week's City Report was from Los Angeles. We also headed to a couple of other places. And this week we are going to have a short City Report on San Diego.
Now, does this contain one of the things that you teased last week as being even better than...
It does.
Okay.
But where we're going to start is Feel It Records, which is...
Feel It.
Feel It. Feel It. It. Records.
What's the it?
I don't know. That's what it's called. Been there twice
now. You
didn't
think to ask?
No. Well, I didn't. But we are going to have a little interview with the owner, Mark Allen, which we can hear now.
Pick up a podcast.
Overall, over the past year, what has been your kind of primary thing that surprised you the most within any of the films that you've seen or any kind of like... stories or things that you recognise that would be that'd be interesting for people to hear?
Chris and I have just reviewed a film which was what's his name? David Lynch's
Short Story.
Straight Story, yeah.
Straight Story, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a very generic title, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, so Yeah, we've reviewed the David Lynch Disney film, which I had no idea before Chris picked it that there was ever a crossover of that caliber.
Fast, Furious, and a bottle of Corona.
Each week when we talk about each Fast and Furious movie, we're not just going to talk, you know, ad nauseum for the whole, like, an hour or something. We're going to both bring three things to the table that we've taken from that particular film. So the first film, I'm sure there'll be a lot of nostalgia for this classic film from 2001. We'll be talking about how the series has changed. Might even talk about things like the Vin Diesel and the Rock feud and all that type of stuff. We may even get into like supporting films and stuff. I mean, what are you looking forward to about this, Wes?
Well, it'll be nice to sort of see through a sort of a jaundiced lens, because I'm against this sort of whole corporate branding monster.
Check out all of these shows on the We Made This podcast network.